Shadow Pokemon are taking over Pokemon Go, and more come up on today's episode of Lays and Tech News. I almost messed that up. I can't believe I almost messed that up. Hey, Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is Lays and Tech News. My name is Taylor American. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss out on the latest that we have. We do this on a daily, so, make sure you stay informed for that. And if you're listening via the podcast, well, be sure to head on over to podcastawards.com and nominate this show for an award. Only if you feel justified in that it should get an award. Obviously, that's up to your determination, but if you've been getting a lot of value out of this show, you've been enjoying the Did You Know segments, the Today in Tech History segments, the articles that we've been covering, by all means, it would be greatly appreciated if you did nominate us for an award. Registration is free. Only takes a couple of minutes. They don't spam your account at all. The nomination period ends at the end of July, and then the voting slate opens up mid-August and goes for about a month. We'll have more information about that as the slate rolls out. So podcastawards.com. And as always, leave a review if possible. Be greatly appreciated. And if you're watching today's show via YouTube, hey, be sure to hit that like button, but only if you get to a part of the show that you actually like. And if you don't happen to like any section, be sure to let me know down in the comment section maybe what you would have liked if there had been an article on it, or if I had talked about something, or maybe if I had dyed my hair blue and shaved it like into a mohawk. You know, suggestions are always welcome in the comment section, so feel free to go ahead and do that. And well, what are you going to be looking at today in terms of stories? Well, our feature stories, we'll be taking a look at the new update brought to Pokemon Go. Yes, Team Rocket has landed and Shadow Pokemon are here. Interesting setup to go along with it. We'll also be taking a look at Snap Snare's new users with a revamped Android app. We'll also be taking a look at an interesting article that I thought. One way to check that your Chrome extensions are safe with the hubbub of worry going around of, well, which Chrome extensions should I use? Which ones are safe? Because apparently millions of people have downloaded some of them, and I thought some of them were okay, and then some of them turn out not to be, and some of them have access to information I didn't know they had access to, and some of them are just granting malware to be installed on my computer, which is weird to say the least. And another one is like just ads popping up all over the place for no random reason at all, and you're like, what's going on here? So we'll be taking a look at that. We'll also be taking a look at a leak of the upcoming iPhone 11. Looks like we got a 3-fer, and I'll explain more in just a minute. Also, we'll be taking a look at UPS forming a drone subsidiary, as it's currently in work to launch a commercial drone delivery program. Also, we'll be taking a look at the hottest phones for the next billion users aren't smartphones. I'll just leave you guessing until we get to that point. And in gaming news, we'll be taking a look at an undersea VR experience makes your living room a coral reef. And finally, we'll be taking a look at something we weren't supposed to be like taking a look at. Well, it was the Pokemon Go article. I'm like, wait, I'm gonna be covering that first. So with that out of the way, did you know that, well, I knew this for a while. I don't know if you knew it. Gold farming has been notoriously popular in developing countries. Chinese prisoners, according to one report, clocked out 12-hour shifts in order to make money for a Chinese prison that they were kind of detained in. It was estimated that at one point there were 100,000 full-time gold farmers in China at one point in time, and I bet it was mostly guaranteed behind the World of Warcraft video game. I was quite familiar with it. I was like, seriously, there are people who will run around and they will farm gold for 12 hours? You gotta be so bored out of your mind, like, please. And it was hilarious. It created this whole new like economy ecosystem, and then like Blizzard cracked down on it because they're like, well, we can't have gold farming going on. It's, you know, breaking terms of service and stuff. And then Chinese prisons were like, but we need the money. And then Blizzard is like, what do we do? This is a very odd conundrum. And here's the funniest thing about all of that. A virtual currency, gold, that you can buy in World of Warcraft is actually worth more than the currency in Venezuela. It should go to tell you something. Virtual in-game currency tied to a game is worth more than a currency that you would use in Venezuela. Eek. So, in case you didn't know that, well, now you know. All right. Welcome to Today in Tech History, the segment where we take a look back on what happened on this day in history, being that today is July 23rd, 2019. On this day in 1930, Daniel McCracken, who wrote the first textbook on Fortran, was born. A student of mathematics and chemistry, McCracken started working in computers at General Electric in 1951, training workers in using the new technology. Based on this teaching experience, McCracken wrote several important computer programming textbooks, most notably A Guide to Fortran Programming in 1961. Man. Now, in case you're wondering, in computer history now, or programming history, at least if you're nerd enough to know your history, McCracken, Fortran kind of have meanings of their own to go on with it, but it's kind of interesting. I mean, like, if this none of this had happened, computer programming languages wouldn't have progressed much further, and probably would have been done by somebody else. But yeah, McCracken was born on this day in 1930. Also on this day in 1985, the Commodore Amiga was introduced. It was the personal computer known as the Amiga 1000 or A1000, featuring a multitasking, windowed operating system, color graphics, and stereo sound, among other features. Ahead of its time, the Amiga developed a loyal user following that remained strong even as the PC market increasingly consolidated between the dominant IBM-compatible PCs and Apple Macintosh computers. In 1994, Byte magazine would write, "The Amiga was so far ahead of its time that almost nobody, including Commodore's marketing department, could fully articulate what it was all about. Today, it's obvious the Amiga was the first multimedia computer, but in those days, it was derided as a game machine because few people grasped the importance of advanced graphics, sound, and video." And finally, but not late, not at all least, in 1903, Ford sells its first Model A car to Ernest Fenning of Chicago, Illinois. And I believe it's still on display to this day in a collector museum somewhere. But yeah, it's kind of important, so I figured I'd mention that. And with that, covering everything in this segment, let's head on over to today's feature story. All right, well, in case you've been playing Pokemon Go and wondering, why are the Pokestops different, and what's this Team Rocket stuff, and what are these Shadow Pokemon and Purifying and all that? Well, we got a complete guide how to catch and purify what the Shadow Pokemon are all about. Apparently, Team Rocket has invaded Pokemon Go. After weeks of teases, the villainous trainers have begun appearing in a hit Pokemon mobile game following its latest update, and they come with Shadow Pokemon in tow, dark versions of monsters that feature glowing red eyes and a sinister aura. Just as in GameCube's Pokemon Colosseum, you can rescue these Shadow Pokemon from their trainers and purify them, but first, you'll need to battle the invading Team Rocket grunts and defeat them. Well, you'll need to find them and then defeat them in a Pokemon battle. If you're unsure of where the Rocket Grunts are lurking or how the process exactly works, well, here's a handy guide to help you catch and purify Shadow Pokemon in Pokemon Go. So, first off, where do you find Team Rocket and those grunts? Well, they're appearing around the world in Pokemon Go, but the villains aren't just hanging out anywhere. They can only be found at certain Pokestops. Fortunately, there are a few visual clues that indicate which stops have been taken over by Team Rocket. First, the cube that denotes a Pokestop on the overall map will twitch as though it were glitching out. approach one of these Pokestops and you notice it is a little bit discolored, appearing black instead of its normal shade of light blue. That's your cue that a Team Rocket Grunt is lurking at the stop. Spin its photo disc and the Rocket Grunt will appear. At present, Team Rocket Pokestops are a rare sight, so your odds of coming across one are slim. When a Pokestop is taken over by Team Rocket, it will only be for 30 minutes at a time, so you have a 30-minute window. But you do have a brief window to battle the villains, and in order to battle them and most likely win, you'll need to be at least level 8 in order to encounter a Team Rocket Pokestop. So, how do you catch them? Well, once you've encountered a Team Rocket Grunt at a Pokestop, they'll challenge you to a battle. As previously mentioned, each Grunt will have a Shadow Pokemon, which is surrounded by a dark aura. Defeat the Rocket Grunt in battle, and they will leave their Shadow Pokemon behind, giving you an opportunity to catch it. So, after you've defeated them, it'll say, oh, look, you got a Pokemon, and then you want to catch it, and then the ball option will pop up. You can select the ball or treats or whatever and throw it at and catch it. Now, once you've caught the shadow Pokemon and added it to your collection, you can choose to either keep it in its shadow state or purify it. This can be done by exchanging a certain amount of Stardust and candy from the Pokemon's information screen. Last I checked, it seems to be on average like 2 candies of the current candy of the Pokemon and like 2,000 Stardust. Now, while the shadow Pokemon may look cooler, there are a few benefits to purifying them, which was one of my questions that I had. Sorry, I have a tickle in my throat. First, purifying a Pokemon will cause its base stats to increase. Purified Pokemon will also require less Stardust and candy to power up, and one of the moves they knew as Shadow Pokemon Frustration will be replaced by the strong Normal-type Attack Return. So, I guess there's those benefits there, and now I actually know what to look for when I'm catching these shadow Pokemon and they have a 30-minute window. Hopefully, here's my hope. Hopefully this goes on for a while. Not like it's like a little one-off, like 1 week or 2 week or maybe even like a month-long thing. I would like to see this remain in the game a lot longer than that. Like, give it the 3 months. Give it 3 or 4 months, because then you can settle in, you can actually get your shadow Pokemon, you can do your battles, get all your updates. Then I'll find it a little bit more enjoyable instead of just saying, oh, it's community day, you have 3 hours to get more candies and catch more Pokemon. And I'm like, I'm busy watching a movie for the next 3 hours. Stupid Pokemon Go app, I don't know, snap my phone in half. So that's my thoughts on it, at least. As always, if you guys are interested in this article or any of the other articles that we cover in today's show, be sure to head on over to technewsgadget.net. As always, also, oh, you can always leave your comments. They are greatly appreciated. You heard my comments. Yay, Pokemon Go. What's the fun? And I'm still playing it. Okay, let's get on to the next story before I lose it. All right, so next up, Snap is, getting some new users with a revamped Android app. They're now boasting 203 million daily active users, which is quite impressive. Snap, the parent company of the messaging app Snapchat, said Tuesday that its daily active user base grew 7% to 203 million in the second quarter, suggesting the company was seeing success with its revamped Android app, and boy, it needed a little bit of a revamping. That's an increase of 13 million from the 190 daily active users the company reported in the first quarter, 190 million previous quarter. Snap CEO Evan Spiegel, during a call with analysts, said that new Snapchat lenses, an augmented reality feature that allows people to distort their faces, helped to fuel user growth. One popular filter that Snapchat released this year allowed users to change their gender in photos. And, well, I saw that on Facebook, on Snapchat, and it was actually kind of entertaining. People are going around saying, well, I look better as a woman than a guy, or I look better as a guy than a woman. And then, like, wait, this is actually disturbing. One person, still a single individual that I was following on the internet, he was like, man, I look so good, maybe I should marry myself. So, there you go. The popularity of these lenses drew millions of people into our rebuilt Android application, where they experienced the new and improved Snapchat that led to increased engagement, Spiegel said. The growth in users is the biggest gain the company has had since the second quarter of 2016. So this is actually reason to be excited and happy about. They almost got to nice crisp 10% increase compared to 2016. Snap has currently been grappling with challenges, including executive turnover, and was experiencing consecutive drops in daily active users. Growth has returned this year, though Snap's user base is still smaller than those of Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. In April, the company updated Snapchat's Android app with a revamped camera and fewer bugs. The company also released new games and original shows on Snapchat in an effort to keep users on the platform a little longer. Now the challenge is to convince those newly added users to stick around and continue to use Snapchat on an ongoing basis. As long as it continues to roll out compelling new features, they will do just that. So, most of its growth in daily active users came from outside of North America and Europe. Snap is also reporting $388 million in revenue, which was above the $359.7 million that they had expected. And as for stock, the company's stock is up more than 11% to $16.54 a share in after-hours trading. So, yay, good news for Snap. I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Okay, for me personally, I know exactly how to use it. And I don't use it all that much because it's not really... I don't know, I don't exactly fit the mold for it. But from, like, a business standpoint, I'm still trying to figure that out. Like, do we have a business one? How does that work? And we post and this and that and the other thing. And all the questions that I have to go along with it. So hopefully Snap is working out great for you guys. Let me know down in the comment section. Obviously, it's always slow and steady for me, I guess, because I'm still trying to figure it out. So there we go. All right. So now we move on to a nice helpful guide. I guess there's one way to check that your Chrome extensions are safe and, well, in light of the recent browser extension leak and a bunch of other stuff going on with Chrome add-ons you may have installed, here's how you can do a check to see if the add-ons you may have installed or are thinking of installing are any bad actors or ones you should probably not install or ones that are okay and you could probably install. To do so, I guess you use a piece of lightweight software called Chrome Extension Source Viewer that can uncover potentially shady behaviors like the ability to execute remote code. And before we get to the steps, we should point out that this tool may not catch every dangerous browser extension. The DataSpy add-ons got away with widespread data tracking by tricking Google and hiding their malicious activity. Possible others could too. Also, the tool might identify extensions that are completely fine. This is only one item in your security tool bag. Some due diligence will still be required on your end to separate good extensions from bad ones, but at least you'll have a better idea of what to look up. So, yes, it looks like you install it. It's an extension source viewer add-on. Open the Chrome Web Store page for each extension you wish to check. While on the Chrome Web Store page for an extension, click on the Chrome Extension Source Viewer, the CRX icon next to the URL bar. Click View Source. Wait for the new page to fully load, then find and open the manifest.json file. Press F3 or Control F to open the page search and look for unsafe-eval. Well, what does this mean? The unsafe eval content security policy indicates that a particular extension can execute remote code. That can be a security risk depending on what the extension is actually doing. A big enough one to note that Mozilla doesn't allow Firefox extensions in its directory that are set up like this. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean an extension in operating and they're going to steal your data or they're working in bad faith. However, it does indicate that you might want to give that extension more scrutiny. Search the web to see if there are any problematic reports about it. If you're going to dial down on the number of browser extensions you use, which is a great security practice, this might help you identify potential extensions that you really don't use all that much and can safely remove. So with that, there you go. Let's head on over to the next article I got lined up for you. All right, so we got some gadget news. I guess there is a trio of iPhone releases set to release this fall. New leaks are in. This year, the company seems to be prepping a fresh trio of iPhones. The new models will be powered by Apple's A13 chip and will still be equipped with Lightning ports rather than USB-C. The news comes from Guillermo Rambo at 9 to 5 Mac, who has produced some reliable Apple scoops in recent months. He cites people who have seen the devices, and paired with the latest claims from Apple supply chain, it could be looking like a plausible picture of what we can expect from Cook and crew later this fall. The three models of what would likely be dubbed the iPhone 11 are reportedly intended to replace the three iterations of the iPhone XS that debuted last year. The replacement for the iPhone XS is internally known as the D42, while the D43 will sub in for the iPhone XS Max. The N104 will replace the less expensive iPhone XR. The three new models will have the same screen resolutions as the existing iPhone XS counterparts. Screen technologies will also be the same, with the D42 and D43 sporting OLED retina displays, and the N104 running a 2x liquid retina display. Now, the arrival of the A13 chip will likely mark a step up in power for the Apple devices. Chip engineering and architecture has been a growing focus for the company, so they doubled it, or tripled it, quadrupled it, or something, I don't know. They increased the number of operations per second from 600 billion to 5 trillion, and the A12X systems on a chip in the 2018 iPad Pro delivered a lot better stats than the 2017 and 2016 models of the MacBook Pro. And just rumors and guesswork about the A13, but it seems that Apple will want to keep pushing for ever bigger and more impressive stats in this area. Also, one of the more notable changes being reported for these phones is a new type of Taptic engine. We've heard that the engine's codename is Leap Haptics, but that's all about the insight available presently. The haptics are expected to potentially replace Apple's 3D touch system. Cameras have also received a lot of attention from Apple in recent years, and new models seem to come with another fresh batch of updates. Front camera on a device will add support for slow motion video capture at, get this, 120 frames per second. In addition, Bloomberg previously reported that a wide angle image option was in development and that it will be unveiled on the D42 model. Design wise, it works as three separate cameras on the back of the phone, all contained in a square. The camera trio is being used for an option called Smart Frame, which will capture more of an image than appears in a framed area to offer more options for cropping and framing in post-production. 9to5Mac reports that the extra information captured by the wide angle would be discarded after a grace period due to privacy concerns. So with that, well, now we got a little bit more of a look at what we're going to be looking at the iPhone 11. Obviously, if you're an Apple fanboy, you're probably going to run out and buy the 11 anyways. You're probably going to have a step up, but it's probably only going to be like a slight step up. And then when the 12 comes out, the following, with the 5G and everything else, you'll be like, and then you'll like punch down the door. And then you can set up your tent for a month before the launch is actually released, and you can buy it in the store, and everybody can look at you weird, and you'll be like, what? I'm here for the 5G phones, loser. If you don't like it, get out. And they'll be like, no, I'm trying to get in the store, dude. You put your tent right in front of the door. And then they like kick down your tent, and you all get mad and everything, and then, you know, that's why you don't put your tent up in front of the Apple store. So anyways, I'm kidding. I'm probably gonna get yelled at now for saying this. It's a funny joke. I mean, I don't understand why some people like to camp outside stores. I mean, I understand the reason too. It's just, why do it when like most of the people are like, yeah, I just order it online and then it's either A, available in store for me to walk in and pick up because it's mine, I pre-ordered it, it has my name on it, or it gets shipped right to my house directly. I don't even have to visit the store. But, you know, people will be people, and let's just say it makes for entertaining news stories. Alright, so moving on to some more news. Drone news, that is. UPS is looking to form a drone subsidiary as it works to launch commercial drone delivery programs. So, it's obviously, it really wants to get the drone delivery program in the air, as it were. Logistics and shipping giant has also applied for the highly restricted Part 135 air carrier certification, which would allow for approved UPS drones to fly over people at night and out of the operator's line of sight. The certification would give UPS the highest level of Federal Aviation Administration approval for a drone delivery operation and pave the way for UPS to run one of the few commercial drone delivery programs in the U.S. UPS said that certification approval could come as early as this year, and this is quite exciting. UPS is committed to using technology to transform the way we do business, said Scott Price, UPS Chief Transformation and Strategy Officer. UPS's formation of a drone delivery company and application to begin regular operations under this level of certification is historic for UPS and for the drone and logistics industries overall, and this is definitely exciting news. Ultimately, they're aiming to use Flight Forward to drive growth via revenue-generating deliveries. For instance, UPS is currently participating in a drone delivery test program that's transporting medical samples throughout a hospital in North Carolina. The Part 135 certification would enable UPS to expand that program to more healthcare networks interested in similar services. So, for those of you who don't know, in the U.S., there are some stringent regulatory restrictions that are currently hampering the rollout of commercial drone delivery programs. In April, the FAA gave Alphabet-owned Wing the green light to begin commercial drone deliveries by granting it the Part 135 air carrier certification that allows it to bypass certain drone regulations. Meanwhile, Amazon announced in June a new commercial delivery drone that it said would be delivering packages to customers within months. The new drone marked a major milestone for Amazon's Prime Air program, which has developed more than 24 drone designs since its inception. However, unlike Alphabet's Wing, Amazon's FAA clearance came in the form of an experimental airworthiness certificate that lets the company perform advanced testing of its drones. So, I can guarantee you this, based on this report alone, probably come the end of the year and probably a little bit more often in 2020, and as you know, the years go on, we'll be hearing more about drone and drone delivery programs, more and more going on, you know, with Google having their Wing program flying around, with Amazon having their Amazon Prime Air program going on, and now with UPS. And we'll see more what comes out of it. Obviously, to keep in mind, they're going to be keeping things in check in terms of what they can and can't do and what happens when some idiot decides to shoot down a drone, stuff like that. Because stuff like that will happen, but if you have all this stuff in place, you'll figure it out as you go along. And it's not going to, you can't guarantee a perfect launch, but what you can see is cost savings, great new industry, speedier service, and you don't have to worry about a person dropping it off. You just have the drone come fly in, drop off, and go. It'll make things a lot easier moving forward. All right, so did you know that the hottest phones for the next billion users aren't smartphones at all? Get this. First-time internet consumers are connecting to the web on a new breed of devices costing just $25. And that's U.S. dollars if you think I'm making this up. So the hottest phones for the world's next billion users aren't made by Samsung or Apple. In fact, they aren't even smartphones. Millions of first-time internet consumers from the Ivory Coast to India and Indonesia are connecting to the web on a new breed of devices that cost about $25. The gadgets look like the inexpensive Nokia Corp phones that were big about two decades ago, and you know those quite well. But these hybrid phones, fueled by inexpensive mobile data, provide some basic apps and internet access in addition to calling and texting. Smartphone features, as they are known, are one of the mobile phone industry's fastest growing and least known segments, providing a simple way for some of the world's poorest people to enter the internet economy. While global smartphone sales began sliding last year as markets became saturated, smart feature phone shipments tripled to around 75 million from 2017, according to research firm Counterpoint. Some 84 million are likely to be shipped this year. Even as rich nations start to roll out 5G technology, some 3.4 billion people around the world remain cut off from the internet. According to We Are Social, another research firm, most of them already use traditional unconnected mobile phones, meaning they can easily make the transition to similarly shaped devices capable of high-speed web connections. And a lot of this is mainly in countries like India and China. Take the case of Kamlesh Kumar, who makes about $80 a month selling mangoes, avocados, and lychees off the sidewalk in New Delhi. 2 years ago, the 35-year-old decided to replace his inexpensive mobile phone that lacked web access. He couldn't afford even the cheapest bare-bones smartphone that cost around $100, so he paid about $20 for a smart feature phone called the Jio phone from Indian mobile operator Reliance Jio Infocom Limited. Now he listens to Bollywood music on a job, using Google's built-in voice assistant to search for Hindi language tunes on YouTube. At night, his family crowds around a device to watch movies. I couldn't do anything on my old phone, he said. And get this, Mr. Kumar pays less than $2.50 a month for all the mobile data he needs. Smart feature phones aren't only inexpensive, but they also have physical keypads that are less intimidating than touch screens for those new to the technology. Meanwhile, the batteries last for days, a bonus in places where electricity is unreliable. Now, there is a trade-off for the lower price. The devices typically have slower and less powerful components using basic cameras, and screens are usually only just a few inches in size. And we know here in countries that have moved well into 5G mobile smartphone connected technology, exactly how it's all started out, really pixely, really grainy, not really much on the phone, wasn't really that big of a screen. There are also fewer apps available for smart feature phones. Now, here's what's interesting. The demand for reliable and affordable technology continues to rise around the world, said Cesar Sengupta, vice president of Google's Next Billion Users Initiative. Smart feature phones provide a gateway for the next billion users to more advanced, affordable technology. And this is really where it gets really exciting, because you see, if you can get more people in Indian and Chinese and Asian countries, well, I have that 3.4 billion people connected, and then everybody will be connected to the internet. Quite impressive. Even if it isn't the fastest, they'll be connected. YouTube. Get it? Facebook? Get it? Simple stuff. We're spoiled here. Well, now you know where it's going, and now you know the struggles that Samsung and Apple are dealing with. And I kept saying, you guys are going to have this problem sooner or later. But, well, at least somebody's making a jump on it and making lots of money at it at the same time. And making money in a good way, by the way. I mean, if you're a business, you're going to be making a profit, but it's to better the people who buy it. So I'm excited for them for that. The last story we got today is, well, there is an undersea experience in VR that turns your living room to a coral reef. And if you're looking at the photo right now, you're like, is that a wall in a living room? And there's like this cutout and you can see like fish and stuff. Yeah. YouTube.com/tech news gadget if you want to watch today's video. Magic Leap Studios plans to debut a new experience for the Magic Leap AR headset at SIGGRAPH next week. The studios promise that Undersea will transform your living room into a serene, photorealistic coral reef. Magic Leap Studios, the company's internal development studio, will fully reveal Undersea next week. Undersea is a room-scale, spatial computing experience through which users can relax and observe underwater life in a dynamically generated coral reef biome. Distinct vistas and creatures presented in a photoreal art style provide an opportunity to feel a sense of presence and connection between the creatures, the environment, and the user, the company says about the experience. And I guess they have a video that goes along with it. The VP of production goes on to talk about some stuff. Magic Leap Studios is stressing the graphical fidelity of the experience, saying that it's built on Unreal Engine in Vulkan 3.1 Mobile for an experience which pushes the graphical boundaries of spatial computing. And just looking at it, oh, it looks nice. Magic Leap Studios has also developed experiences like Create, an interactive toy room-like sandbox for Magic Leap, though it has a cartoonish art direction compared to what Undersea is striving for. In many cases, ambient content, which is always happening around you, as opposed to game-like experiences that have distinct starting and stopping points, is a great fit for AR. Now, it's clear how Undersea could really fit the bill here, along with the magic charter of Magic Leap, by turning your ordinary living room into something ever-changing, alive, and aware of you. Though the studio hasn't revealed much about how the experience will work just yet, it could be a lot of fun if the undersea creatures acted a little bit like virtual pets once you gain their trust by tempting them with food, of course, and then you can have a Neopet or Nano Nunu pet, something like that, yeah. At the SIGGRAPH debut, the company says they'll be digging into the development process of Undersea to help third-party developers learn more about building AR experiences for Magic Leap. It's not clear yet when the experience will actually be released publicly, but I hope soon, because this looks nice. I mean, look at this. It looks very watery and oceany and everything that goes along with it. And if you just, all you do is you put a headset on, you're looking at this stuff, and it's happening around you in your living room in real time. Awesome. All the more for it. Woo! And with that, that wraps up this episode of the Lace and Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. Lace and Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button and by leaving a comment. And if you're listening via the podcast, be sure to leave us a review. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for Lace and Tech, Gadget, and Gaming News, visit TechNewsGadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.